I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Gavin Emmett, and this is the BT Sport MotoGP podcast. Today, I'm joined by Keith Ewan and Julian Ryder here in the Czech Republic at Brno ahead of round 10 of the season. We're just days on, of course, from the Austrian Grand Prix and Andrea Iannone's maiden MotoGP victory in a round which saw the leaders in all three classes cement their places at the top of the standings. So, boys, not a bad week, was it, for Andrea Iannone? Birthday on Tuesday, Saturday on pole position, Sunday wins his first MotoGP race, and then gets the private jet off to Ibiza for a bit of a do with his pals afterwards.
Which he denies any kind of party.
He claimed he was at home. I don't believe him.
I don't believe him either. You don't need a private jet and that many female companies to when you go home, I suppose. But, I mean, finally, Ducati get it across the line. 1-2. It was what was expected. But, of course, trying to live up to that expectation is always so hard. And on that particular track as well, you couldn't be sure because the weather had changed all week long and he stuck with the soft rear tyre option, which worked for him, whereas Dovi outthought the situation, went with the slightly harder version, and it didn't make any difference at the end. The soft version that Iannone had on worked for him right to the flag. It also fooled Jorge Lorenzo, who thought the soft one would go off as well.
Well, because they were told so by Michelin. And Michelin's advice before the race was you must go with the harder tyre. It's what you're going to need. He took the gamble. Ducati.
Although Gigi Dall'Igna said that on Saturday night he wanted both his riders to use the soft. And they changed their mind after running the harder one in warm-up on Sunday morning.
Although Iannone only made his mind up on the grid.
No. Iannone had the plan in his head right from the start, and that was throwing the rest a
curveball.
Allegedly, Your Honour.
Different stories from different places.
You could see these two staring each other down. I know why I stay out of the commentary booth during commentary now. Suddenly, get that aircon on a little bit, I tell you. But he didn't tell anyone about this selection, did he? He didn't tell anyone until the grid. That's the main thing. It changed on the grid. Basically, Michelin's advice was go with the harder tyre. Yeah. Ignored it, went ahead. Hey, to have paid off in a victory. All credit to him.
The slightly perplexing side of this race, and forget about the tyres for the minute, is the fact they were 2 seconds a lap slower in the race than they'd been all weekend. I couldn't quite work out why. We talked about whether there was a fuel consumption situation. This is a fast track.
Yes.
They didn't. It was an unknown quantity. It's a fast track. They're flat out on it. Fuel mileage may have been an issue. Now, we don't know if they wound the wick down, but if they did, then Yamaha must have done the same because they weren't going. It was a strange day. That 46 degrees of track temperature on Sunday either knocked the edge off the overall lap times, or the fact was that Ducati had wound it back a bit.
As everybody else, as you said. Mm. And there was certainly Iannone after the race was talking more about having to be restrained. Not just because of the fuel, but because of the tyre as well, so not to run out of rubber.
Had his moments, though, when he was behind Dovi, didn't he? Every time we flinched collectively every time he ran.
If only Dovi had rear-view mirrors on, he'd have been...
Memories of Argentina.
Oh, yes.
What about Dovi himself? Second place?
Disappointed.
Does that sum his career up a little bit? No, always a nearly man.
Do you know what? That phrase you just said there, Gav, bang on, sums his career up. He's a really good motorcycle racer, really good thinker, solid man. I mean, he finishes all his Grand Prix, don't hardly ever crash unless someone assists him with it.
This will be his 250th race on the bounce.
Mm, exactly.
Your point, I think, you're going to say
he's made,
aren't
you? I think
we
even saw it back in the 250s when he used to race Jorge Lorenzo. He was always there, just never quite had that moment.
That was almost miraculous because Lorenzo was on a factory Yamaha.
A factory Aprilia.
Sorry, a factory Aprilia. I do beg your pardon. And Dovi was on a Honda that was several years out of date.
Which is why, if you remember, that I really did think that Iannone was the man that should have stayed at Ducati in the first place, because he just had that more potential, I think I said at the beginning of the year. He looked like he had more potential. Now we're going to see something interesting to see whether they can turn the potential of Spielberg into something here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also the trouble is, from Ducati's point of view, you know, they had the potential to upset their new employee rather a lot.
Mr. Lorenzo, of course. Hey, interesting that there was I love the quip on Twitter.
Yeah.
There were three Ducati riders on the podium.
But he did
Simon
seem happy. Even making comments after the race. Oh, it looks good for Ducati, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's all those kinds of things already. Right, we've got a Twitter question from Troy McGee. Do you think Ducati could potentially ride the crest of a proverbial wave and pick up more wins this season?
Do you know what? I don't think so. I think that there is the potential. Once you get that logjam gone, once you've had a win, it lifts a whole team. It lifts the riders as well. But for some strange reason, I'm just questioning whether they got the right blokes to do it. I think when you got Lorenzo there, perhaps they'd be able to pick up on that. This is a tough track they've come to now. I wouldn't say this is a Ducati track.
I'd say this is a Jorge Lorenzo track, wouldn't you?
Well, I would. I mean, I just think that this Yamaha, Yamaha with Jorge Lorenzo, although the weather forecast is iffy this weekend, and that could
Friday and Sunday.
It could really upset Jorge's momentum. You know, everyone's talking about Jorge's back because of what he did last time round, But is he that confident in the wet stuff? He had three race meetings off, effectively.
One of which wasn't his fault, but he'd done the tyring. So, yeah, you're right, actually.
The race weekend here last year, Ducati went well during practice and just didn't actually quite translate to race day. So we know they can go well. We always talk about that hill, don't we? Coming back
horsepower
up the hill.
Horsepower hill. Horsepower hill, that's for sure. That's God's own dyno, I think. Did Neil Spalding call it that?
Spalding.
I quite like that.
Quote.
So well done, Neil.
Jürgen van der Gerberg said it first and Spalding polished it up.
Good journalists.
Yes.
Plagiarisers.
Just reporting.
But could that play to their strengths, perhaps, this weekend?
Perhaps it will. We'll wait and find out. It's a question of whether the Yamaha have got, if they hit the mark. The biggest disappointment for me last time was Valentino. He had pace right from free practice one, looked really, really good, split the Ducatis on the front row of the grid, and then seemed to just fade in fourth place. He just couldn't match them.
The man who was happiest was Jorge, because he achieved the two things he could do at the weekend. He knew he couldn't beat the Ducatis, but he beat his teammate and took a few points out of Marquez.
And the bike he's on next year won. So it was good in another way as well. It will give them some credit. I just want to say about Ducati as well. What about the work that Dallinia's put in on that bike to turn it from where he went, where they were, going with the CRT regulations, making the championship almost change around them, to becoming race winners again? What about the journey they've been on?
I think that what Dallinia done, you can't lay it just at his door. Basically, he pulled together all the strands that were working very well.
But someone had to do it.
They had to do it. And that's what Dallinia's job was. And he brought together some very, very good strands at Ducati and made it where it is.
Yeah.
But you still got to answer me why all the 214.3 and the all the old bikes are going so well still as well. I mean, it's Ducati,
they have their strengths, don't they?
Inherently, Ducati have strengths on different racetracks. I mean, maybe it's force of numbers or something. There's so many of them out there.
Yeah, you're right. Dallinia's genius is in managing some of
the mess
and making sense of what was a disorganised mess at Ducati. And Dallinia has organised it, got it pointing in the right direction, and that is his genius.
We've mentioned Jorge Lorenzo and that he probably will go into this weekend as the favourite here at Brno, this being a Yamaha track. What about Marquez, the man who's leading the World Championship?
Remarkable.
Tough weekend last time out.
Remarkable. To do what he did. I've dislocated my shoulder. The fact of the matter is that he popped it back in on the scooter on the way. It dropped back in on the scooter on the way back to the pits. When he put a jacket on, I didn't believe that he'd actually had a dislocated shoulder, because to go through that rotation of putting your arms in a jacket, a long sleeve jacket, I thought, that's not dislocated, but it was. And that fifth place, damage limitation, you talk about Jorge did what he did, Jules said a moment ago, he's gained some points on Marc Marquez, but not as many as
five
he might
points,
have thought.
Yeah, exactly, Keith. I think that's a very good point. And the way Marquez was talking just now in the pre-event press conference was about, this is not my favourite track. We'll suffer here like I suffered at Le Mans. It's the two we know. And I think he's going to be quite happy to see a small points loss this weekend.
The quote was, need to win minimum two races more. That's Marc Márquez.
Yeah,
but he has got tracks later on in the season that he'll really fancy his chances at. Aragon, in particular, is going to be one of those. He'll be thinking about doing the business there. Japan, you might think Ducati Sepang? Might have something. Sepang as well, I think, would be the couple.
You know, if you were a gambling man, those would be the two you'd be saying are the racing certainties.
I'm glad you brought Sepang up.
Why is that, Keith?
Because of the Valentino Rossi, Marc Márquez shenanigans of before. And when asked by the good old MCN journo, Simon Patterson, about doping, it seemed to be a question that was way off scale. I didn't quite understand where it was coming from or why.
I think he must be doing a story on doping because he's asked in other briefings today.
And it was the fact that up came Marc Márquez saying that when he was being tested, he realised that Jorge was as well because Jorge tweeted it. And Jorge really amusingly turned around and said, "We were together, no?" And Valentino Rossi had the stoniest face I've ever seen. It was just hilarious.
Yes.
We were together, no? And, of course, all those pictures of them two cuddling and stuff that people put together because the conspiracy theorists. And it's just a very funny moment in the pre-event.
Yeah, I understand that historically one rider from each class has been on the anti-doping programme who has to, and therefore like Olympic athletes and cyclists, has to let the authorities know exactly where he is, you know, at all times.
Yeah, an hour per day.
Quite right, too. And I think all the riders across the press conference were more than happy with that. They all pretty much agreed.
Paul Espargaro said he was on it the first year he was in Moto Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And was tested six or seven times. And now he hasn't been tested since. He says there is a happy medium there.
They do test them a lot if they're on the podium. That's why.
Yeah, but those two done together on the same day, it would seem.
Yeah.
It was
because they are the two on the programme.
Yeah.
It was Cal Crutchlow last year as well. Yeah. And he kept getting woken up at God knows when in the morning.
Oh, he's getting used to now.
Yeah.
Now young Willow.
Speaking of Cal, I had a word with him earlier on. And he said, when I went back... Willow, their new daughter, she slept through till 4:30, had a feed, went back to sleep till 8. I came, I've left, and I've come here. Apparently, she's been up all night. Yeah. So, Cal's escaped all the non-sleeping so far.
Dads tend to cuddle their children quite a lot when they're there, and then when they go, it causes all sorts of hell.
There speaks a man of experience.
Just quickly about Valentino Rossi, got a great record here, but the one thing I want to pick out is he won his first race here 20 years ago, to the day that we're doing this podcast. Incredible that he's still going. We're talking about him coming back in the championship, still going on to win races.
Do you know the thing that marked for me in the press conference just now that we've just listened to was when he looked at everyone out there and he said, "I'm very proud."
Yes.
And I thought, that absolutely sums it up. I mean, and it kind of pulls at your heartstrings when you hear a man like Valentino Rossi talk about being... And so he damn well should be as well with what he's achieved in those 20 years.
One of the things you look for in a true great of a sport is longevity at the top. And there has been nobody who has managed to stay at the top of this sport for anywhere near the length of time that Valentino Rossi has done.
But I think the personal side of it, the fact it means so much to him, is what actually gives him that longevity. It's what gives him the determination to continue. He's very proud of what he's done and he just still enjoys it. It's incredible.
And he still wants to win.
You can see that.
And he's going to have to do something special to bring this championship back. Could it start here at Brno?
Well, do you know what? He's done more this year than he's done in pretty much any other previous year with the way he qualified. He knows what he's done. He's put himself in the position to try and win
races. Seven out of nine front rows.
It's incredible.
Absolutely unbelievable.
In fact,
if you look at his stats...
Wasn't it?
If you look at his stats over there, it might be...
Julian's got that one down. I thought it was 8 out of 9. Julian's got 7 out of 9. You'll be right, Jules. I won't check.
When you look at the pole positions that Lorenzo and Marquez and Stoners and so on have racked up, he's got nowhere near the same amount because it's not something he ever did. He always worked to the race.
It wasn't until the fight with Casey Stoner that he said, "Well, I better start qualifying on the first or second row because otherwise, you know, he gets away." All he was ever bothered about for most of his career was getting the bike right for the race.
That's the remarkable side of Valentino. He's realised where his weak point was coming into 2016. He's done something about it. But unfortunately, that blow-up in Mugello is going to haunt Yamaha or his side of the garage, of the Yamaha garage, because that blow-up just...
Yeah, and the crash in Ashton, which was Valentino's... That was a rider error.
Well, you say a rider error, but that was also a situation where signalling-wise, he thought... He'd got a lesser gap than he had.
Oh, really?
And it was a situation where they hadn't quite coordinated. Because it was slightly confusing, he'd got a much bigger gap and he was still pushing when he crashed.
And that's the trouble. The soft tyre pushed him into a Mandelveen 4 kilometres an hour faster than the old hard one had ever done, and there went the front end.
Well, that's all the top boys. What about the rest last time out? Cal Crutchlow, I'm going to mention first of all. I seem to have just been talking about him. He's a little unlucky with a jump start. If you watch the footage back, he does pull to a stop completely.
Jump starts annoy the hell out of me. Those that cheat deserve to be penalised. But those that, in his case, had no advantage whatsoever. It was disadvantaged by the jump and then he stopped.
He stopped.
And then went again. And that always disadvantages you. They have a bit of a rule in Speedway, don't they?
Yes.
If you anticipate the tapes going up, then they'll put the red lights on if you've got an advantage. If you anticipated it and end up last into the first corner, they'll let it run.
Yeah.
My view is that with a jump start, if you have made an advantage from that jump start, you should be penalised. If you've made no advantage into turn one or turn two, whatever you determine as your advantage point where you measure the advantage, because it just destroys a race, destroys your fan base for that rider. And in this case, how many of them were there again?
Five in total.
Five, because somebody else got pinged later on, absolutely, yeah.
Well, it was, wasn't it Crutchlow got pinged later?
Yeah, there was four at the start, and then Cal got added to it.
Cal got one later.
Brad Smith was saying that he missed that by a hair's breadth, because people around him went and he went.
Well, that's what you do.
He pushed with his legs and then realised, and he was over the front. And
your reaction, you are geared to something that's not, you've bypassed your brain virtually when it comes to your left end.
Yeah.
As soon as you see somebody flinch, pardon me for that, when you flinch.
It's only your mind that made something out of that.
Yeah. when you see, you don't even think, it's like your hand is connected to something else. Your hand is connected to your eyes. There's no brain between it. Mm. And as soon as somebody flinches or that light flickers, you're gone.
Remind me to tell you the Peter Collins Hans Nielsen story sometime.
Well, it's the second time we talked about it, isn't it? After Qatar at the start of the year. It's something that maybe needs looking at in some ways, but maybe...
Well, I just think if you've not actually had a physical advantage by turn one or turn two, if you start in the front row, but you end up being 12th into turn one.
Yes. I mean, Ralph Voldeman at Donington Park many years ago, where he basically zigzagged between the front three rows.
Well, you see, when I've had a jump start, I've gone, because I know I'm going to get a penalty. Yes. So just go and make the most of it.
Jorge Lorenzo.
Jorge Lorenzo, that's
Texas
right.
Didn't.
Texas, yeah.
He should have just gone.
Yeah, no. I mean, if you've jumped the start, you're going to get a penalty. So just go for it. Yeah. Try and get your 30 seconds. It's going to cost you down pit lane.
Get
back
a few of them
in
back.
Lap one,
Eugene, wise words.
Eugene Laverty obviously was having a great ride in the race.
So
and then knocked out in the last corner by Danilo Petrucci. How? They did have a bit of a make-up session on Twitter.
Well, Petrux is a gentleman. And what he held his hands up, he says, I thought his use of English actually was very good, better than mine. I'm mortified.
Yeah.
You know, he said, how can I say so sorry? Yeah. I'm mortified. And that shows the gent he is, but no doubt about it.
He's still public on Twitter as well. Yeah. You know, that is...
He got more fans than he lost.
Although Eugene did suggest...
Maybe in Ireland, you know.
Eugene did suggest that Espresso should be withdrawn from Italian riders on race
A bit
weekend.
Harsh, I think. That will be a...
Well, that would cause some ruptures,
mind you,
it?
Eugene is still one of only two riders to have finished every race this season.
But he just didn't score points for the first time.
Yeah.
Problem he's got, Eugene, is... I mean, there are one or two people who said the deal is done for World Superbike at the moment. I've been told that it definitely isn't done. And he still has a make-your-mind-up session this weekend.
But what about Alvaro Bautista signing for Aspar
this
week?
Well, that's the problem he's got, because that's on a 2016 bike. And so that means that Eugene will only have a lesser machine, which will mean that does he have another year in MotoGP on a motorcycle that technically isn't quite up to his teammates, because he's always going to be playing catch-up. That will not be... that for me, if I was managing him, which I'm not, and I don't think he does have a manager, does he, that works on this stuff?
He has his brother, John.
John, of course. Sorry, John. Forgive me, Jay. I've forgot all about that. So they have a decision to make. Do we stay in MotoGP, where I still think he's got unfinished business because he's still good enough? But he's 30. At some stage, he needs to think about making money. World Superbikes, plus the fact if he does this deal, will he be out of sync then with the World Superbike contracts? Will he get to the end of, if he's got a one-year deal, if he's got a one-year deal with MotoGP, he'll then be out of sync with both MotoGP and World Superbike, which means he will be out of contract and possibly have no ride in a year's time.
Exactly. It's really is a catch-22, this, isn't it?
Well, I don't think so.
I think World Superbike. I agree with Keith.
I think World Superbike. I think that's my personal view is that if I was managing him, I would be steering him towards that. He's 30 years old. Yes, there's unfinished business. Do you know the year that mucked up for him, in my view?
Brilliant. I know what I think.
Brilliant 250cc rider, but that year on 250s in Grand Prix held him back by a year, and it's almost like he's never quite recovered from that.
He had the chance basically to go to Pramac when Gigi D'Alinea first came, because Gigi really is a fan of Eugene's.
I'll take that as a backup then. That yeah, should have done
so
that.
I
as
can
well.
Think of a couple then, yeah, Keith, and we're going to go that
was
way.
It was a time when you possibly didn't want to be on those bikes. That was the.
That's
the
true as well. Being devil's advocate, yeah.
Quite right. But the man who was going to be in charge of Ducati wanted you on a Ducati.
Yeah, and he's always wanted him.
Gigi's a fan of Eugene's.
Mm. Jack Miller, who wasn't able to race last time.
isn't able this time.
And yeah, it looks like he's not going to be able to this weekend. It's just when you don't want to be picking up an injury, isn't it?
It's quite funny because I saw Michael Bartolomei rushing to pull Mr. Trimby, Werther, into the office this afternoon. Shortly before bumping into Ian Wheeler, who told me that Jack wasn't able to ride this weekend because two doctors said he was fit and two doctors said he wasn't. So
and Honda.
That vertebrae at the back. Honda did the right thing by withdrawing him. I think if you leave it to the rider in those circumstances, you're letting him injure himself more.
We know what riders will do. They'll.
And what a place this is for the potential to crash.
Yeah.
And a satellite Honda, Gav, Keith, round here. What's he going to get? 2 points?
Yeah, there you go.
The risk analysis.
And he's 21 years old. He needs rescuing him from himself, and HRC have done the right thing. So, but my reason for mentioning Michael Bartolomei, whenever I see a team manager rushing to placate or to converse with somebody like Mike Trimby, I always wonder what's going on there, whether they had somebody in mind to jump on the bike
Trimby,
for a minute.
Mike Trimby, of course, who runs ERTA, the Racing Teams Association, the people they'd have to go to.
Interesting thought.
We'll have to play this tape back and see if completely wide of the mark or if there is something going on.
Romano Fenati leaving Valentino's organisation. Do you understand that Honda... I understand that Honda also put the nicks on him going straight to another Moto3 team.
So he talked straight away on Sunday, I believe. He was talking to Onjeta.
Onjeta's
about
the
possibility of riding their bike, but Honda put the kibosh on that straight away.
If you want a race winner, though, there's one out there drifting at the moment.
And Honda's view, I understand, is next year, fine. But for this year...
He's going to pay a penalty.
To disrupt the team.
I'm still trying to work out...
Just finally,
well,
I just want to round up last weekend... What's our final word on the Red Bull Ring? What about it? The track itself, somebody didn't like it. But what about the place itself?
I think fantastic Grand Prix. Really, really good Grand Prix. 215,000 people trackside. Had a great feel to it. That little skinny road along the front, I thought, we're going to have a nightmare getting in, we're going to have a nightmare getting out. We had neither. They managed it really well. They kept people in campsites and put on a massive, great push bike field.
And buses.
I laughed at.
Yeah.
I thought, what's this? This is like the Northampton planning people putting a push bike rack in a place that no one's ever going to use, and yet it was full on race day.
Because people parked a couple of miles away and used their push bikes.
So a great deal of thought.
It was a triathlon.
Don't go all Yorkshire on us, Gav.
Here he goes.
We know they're winning again. Well done.
Great Grand Prix, but they had a great air display. And even the tunnel under the track to the media centre had all the world champions from motorcycle
racing.
One
little bit of laziness in there, though. They left the John Surtees picture up from Formula One still in his car kit, his bike kit.
But they did change all the
text. But they changed the text.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm really trying hard to find a fault.
Well, it is a car track.
Yes.
They probably didn't think about the change of gear. But I've got to say, Red Bull Ring is known for Formula One, obviously, and there were a few safety issues, you know, potentially that are going to be changed now from now on in. But it went well. It looked well. It was a great Grand Prix, I thought.
I agree. 100%.
Fantastic. If they go back to a bit of the old track, get the old Hellerich chicane in again, it'll be awesome.
Well, there is talk that they are going to bring that all back into play, isn't
it? It's not like a short of a bob or two, is it?
Do you know what? I also heard today that's the first time he's made money out of that track. That the MotoGP weekend is the first. He bought it as a plaything, Massa Stitch.
Yep.
And that is the first time it's actually physically made any money when MotoGP came on site. Did I say his name wrong?
Yeah, that's the reason I'm giggling.
I can see Gav's giggling. Gav's a multilinguist here. I'm the idiot. Go on, how do you say it then?
Matter shits.
Oh, does he?
Apparently.
well done. I'm glad you said that, not me.
Two reasons to understand Mr. Hewins from Essex there in one sentence.
We'll move on to Moto2 quickly. Joan Zarco, he is in such good form. Odds on now, surely, to be the first Moto2 rider to retain the championship. we just can't. We run out of superlatives for his performances and how he's got back to where he was last year throughout this season.
Well, you know, I got a theory on that. He keeps challenging himself, doesn't he? And I mean, doing a backflip in lederhosen after you sweat it. I mean, that's a challenge in its own.
Hey,
isn't it?
That's how to win over a crowd as
that
well.
It really
isn't it?
Is. I'll tell you what. Massachusetts might have made some money out of the racetrack, but he must have also paid a lot for the privilege of MotoGP, because Carmelo Espeleta does not dress up in lederhosen for no good reason.
That was a cracker.
That was a cracker.
I mean, that was my highlight of the whole
week. We could tell, Gav, you were...
Brilliant. I have to say, anybody that challenges Carmelo with an interview when he's in...
On the grid walk, you and Hodgie, Mick Doohan. Mark Webber, that's it. You can't top that. Yes, you can. Carmelo in lederhosen.
Yeah, knobbly knees, all of them hairy. It's wonderful.
We know Zarco's going to be up there, but I just want to mention quickly Sam Lowe's in the weekend he had. He tested, but they didn't get much time after the race when we were in Austria. What's left of his season now with 55 points, the gap between himself and Zarco? Has he got his head in the Aprilia too much?
I think there's a little bit trouble in camp there at the moment. I think that Sam, he's lost any kind of consistency he had, and the momentum is not in a forward direction at the moment. I think that I would think that Roger Bennett, his manager, will be talking quite strongly with him now, trying to give him guidance.
Because he will be with Roger, won't he?
He will be. Roger understands the game, and to try and recover. I mean, I think the World Championship with Zarco on the kind of electrifying form he's on and the consistent form he's on, Championship's gone for Sam as it is at the minute. But race wins haven't. He's had one race win. He's had one race win this year. He's got to get back to race winning form.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're spot on, Keith. And there is, and I admire Sam. I really like Sam.
We all do.
But perhaps a little bit more listening and taking a little bit of advice. I know what racers are like. They've got to work it out for themselves. They don't like advice, even for people like the team and Roger Bennett, his manager.
Well, the other thing that I've noticed since I've been back here, that you there seems to be more rider... What's the word I'm looking for?
The spotters, you mean?
No, I'm thinking more of the way that some of the teams suck up to the riders a bit more nowadays. It seems to be that riders seem to have a little bit more control and more say within teams. And I think sometimes that strength of management has drifted a little bit.
Interesting.
Not in all teams. Well, it's only an observation that I'm making from my side.
I don't think you're far from the truth on that one.
I think you've probably got a point.
And I think that strong management, the old Colin Wrights of this age... You know,
who both our ex-world champions used to labour under.
And, you know, your Livio Supos and the like that stamp the feet and, you know, say...
Aguma-san at Honda.
Yeah, there's some very good management here, but it just seems at the moment riders have become, you know, a little... I'm trying to think of a word. They're trying to placate them too much.
They all think they're Valentino Rossi.
Well, that they ain't.
Tests have shown.
Move on to Moto3. We've talked about Romano Fenati. He won't be riding this weekend. He will be replaced by Lorenzo Dalla Porta. That's a good replacement. He won't be here this weekend, though, in Brno, because he's still recovering from a bit of an injury. I want to talk about our latest Grand Prix winner, though, Joan Mir. Great form when we saw him in checkered flag. If you want to listen to that, go back and listen to the last podcast, because he's in that one. But he's a good new name. He was great in the Junior World Championship last year. Future star on our hands.
Three pole positions, all converted at Spielberg. Absolutely outstanding. Joan Mir, that was nearly 12 months since a pole position man in Moto3
last year, wasn't it?
Actually won the race.
Bastianini at Misano.
So to convert a Moto3 race from a pole position to a race win is pretty special.
And didn't he do it well? It wasn't like the Red Sea parted in front of him, was it?
No. Sat at the back of that group, made his choice to get to the front when he did.
And he's a fantastic advert for cosmetic dentistry.
He really is.
Palma de Mallorca. What a set of gnashers.
And he can use them.
I hadn't noticed.
He has. He's got the brightest teeth in the world.
Oh, really?
Because you interviewed him personally, whereas we were looking on the monitor.
Yeah.
They come out really bright.
Oh, yep.
I can hear the cameraman shouting, "Racks!"
What about Jorge Navarro crashing out? Fenati gone now as well.
Well, that's done it,
isn't
it?
This title surely is
well
going
done, Brad.
Down south. Yeah.
Shall we give it him now?
Going down south.
South of the equator, by a good
You know,
way.
The one thing about that I really like about it is it's not a traditional heartland. I remember we had Gabor Tamashi when he won from Hungary a few years ago. But it's not a heartland. It's not Spain. It's not your Italy. It's not Danny Kent winning last year. I know we haven't had Grand Prix winners or champions from Britain for a long time. But for one to go to South African for the first time in a long time as well. It's great for
Corky
the sport.
Ballington, I suppose, would be the...
Eckerald, did he ever...
Eckerald won.
Yoni was 1980. He won his world title on a 350. Cork, I think, It was definitely 1980, Jules, because I remember racing. I led at the Nürburgring from the third row, and the first man passed was
Jonny
Eckerold.
Jump starts, hello.
And Jonny Eckerold, now we all had jump starts in them days.
Oh, good, push starts, wasn't it?
It's called anticipation. Anticipation of the bloke. Anyway, but Jonny Eckerold was the first person past me, and then Anton Mang was next. And those two, whoever beat whoever, were going to be world champions, and it was a dogfight. And they would have qualified, I think, third and fourth on the 500cc grid around that 14-mile
the old ring. And it was factory Kawasaki versus very private Bimoto Yamaha.
I've had all this today.
Thanks very much, Keith. Thanks, Julian, as well. Make sure that you at home download our review podcast, which will be following the race here in Austria. And remember, you can watch every single session live this weekend on BT Sport 2.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.